How did one of the world's most famous atheists become one of its most famous Christians? Find out in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for May, From Atheism to Christianity, The Story of C.S. Lewis. It's written by regular guest Dr. Joel Heck. From Atheism to Christianity is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or browse before you buy at issuesetc.org. From Atheism to Christianity.
This amazing specimen has preserved not only the texture and structure of what are called the meninges, these very tough membranes that surround the actual soft parts of the brain, but the mineralization has also preserved the fine blood vessels running through those textures, and also the really fine capillaries and a little bit of the cortex of the brain immediately beneath those membranes.
That's Dr. David Norman of the University of Cambridge talking about the discovery of a 2,500-pound dinosaur fossil that looks, well, like no fossil I've ever seen. Ordinarily, you think of bones that are articulated, put up in a museum. That's not what this one is. We're going to be talking about the discovery of a 2,500-pound intact dinosaur fossil with Brian Thomas here in the first few minutes of Issues Etc. Greetings and welcome. Live on this Friday afternoon, May the 12th, I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. A little bit later, Holly Shearer joins us to talk about Mother's Day gifts. As we head into that weekend, Pastor Ted Giese will be with us to continue our review of the movie Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. It's This Week in Pop American Christianity with Pastor Chris Rosebro. Today we'll talk about the sneaky squid spirit doctrine taught by the editor of Charisma magazine. That's some strange stuff, or at least it sounds strange. And then we'll play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. We've got four soundbites we'll play for you. 1, 2, 3, 4. And after you've heard them right around, the last half hour of the program, it's your opportunity to vote and to pick which one will be Issues Etc. soundbite of the week and to win the LPR bundle package. That's an I Have Issues t-shirt, an Issues Etc. travel mug, pen, bumper sticker, and notepad. It goes to the listener with the best vote for Issues Etc. soundbite of the week on this Friday afternoon. You can call us during the next 2 hours, and you can also vote for soundbite of the week, 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet @issuesetc, or you can vote in advance for Issues Etc. soundbite of the week at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. Joining us to talk about the discovery of a 2,500-pound intact dinosaur fossil, Brian Thomas. He has a bachelor's degree in biology and a master's degree in biotechnology, and he's science writer for the Institute for Creation Research. Brian, welcome to Issues Etc.
Thank you very much.
You have to I know it's radio, but you have to describe this simply stunning specimen of, I'm calling it an intact dinosaur fossil, because we're not looking at bones, are we?
No, and that's what I think of, and what I've seen in museums all around the nation is, you know, when you think of a dinosaur, it's the smooth surface of that bone. But in this case, we're looking at every nook and cranny, every groove of its outer skin, and all these bumps of all the scales. It's just amazing. Some have called it looking like a statue of a nodosaur dinosaur. It's amazing.
So we're looking at from the tip of the nose about to the hips of this thing. It's rather large. What kind of a dinosaur is it? How do you describe that one?
A nodosaur is got armor plating all over it, like an ankylosaur type. So it's one of the, I guess you'd call it, a tank-like dinosaurs. This one had one huge spike projecting from each of its front shoulders, which is an odd place to have a spike, but that's where they were.
So if you're picturing in your mind something like a armadillo blown up to about what size?
Let's say 18 feet long armadillo, I guess.
Is this the first time we have found something like this that has that kind of statue-esque quality to it when it comes to dinosaur fossils?
I'm going to say no. It's the first time we've found anything that's in the nodosaur ankylosaur group. We have mummified hadrosaurs, for example, and preserved skin on T-Rex specimens. But this is the first one like this. And it's all the more spectacular because in those cases, you just get fragments and bits. This specimen preserves the whole, like you said, the front torso and head, and the head is still connected, and that's very rare in fossils. So it's rare to have the head connected to the rest of the body. It's rarer still to have the scales, and it's even more rare to have the skin still on top of the scales, skin with its original coloration possibly still inside.
And it is of some depth, the actual preservation is some depth into the fossilized creature, the stone that has replaced the living matter of the creature?
Well, that's the thing is, with many discoveries, and possibly including this one, stone has not replaced the original material. So we may actually be looking at partial replacement or no replacement. And some of these fossils, they're just dinosaur bones, like you'd find a cow carcass, except covered with sediment in these situations. And its original, I mean, these guys are calling it tendons still along the spine that look like beef jerky. I mean, it's not mineral. It doesn't look like stone at all. And it could actually be just decayed, partly decayed and dehydrated cartilage like we've seen in other fossil specimens.
So it's very possible that we're looking here not at a fossil, strictly speaking, not as a stone cast of what was once there as living matter, but a mummified specimen of a dinosaur.
It's possible, but there haven't been any technical reports out yet. All we have are the initial sort of splashy-looking photos, and they do look amazing.
What does this, first of all, how is this preservation, how is it posited by the scientists that are reporting on this, that this kind of preservation has taken place? We're not talking about hundreds of thousands of years. We're talking about hundreds of millions of years. How are they explaining it?
Well, they're saying about 110 million for this one. If you find, like what they've described in some of the articles I've read online on this one, the keratin, you know, the it's like this fingernail material that was part of the structure over their horns and in their skin scales. This keratin, you know, fingernail material, that it doesn't last even 1 million years. And so most of the researchers who report the finds, they just say, hey, look, it's here. And they don't really worry with the questions of how it could still be here, even though keratin and collagen, for example, that's what makes up cartilage, these materials just don't last even 1 million years. So there's very few researchers that even want to wrestle with that issue because it's so difficult for them to reconcile the short-lived nature of these materials, these proteins, with the long age assignments given to these fossils.
The simple explanation, of course, the most direct and reasonable explanation, which is avoided meticulously by evolutionists and by kind of those who want to assign those long ages, is that those ages aren't as long as everyone has thought to this point, isn't it?
Well, if you take away those ages and if you say, hey, maybe this is a lot more recently deposited than 110 million years or even 1 million years, then all of a sudden you have, you know, you're down into the realm of being able to easily explain the persistence of proteins like these. And then if you add to that the idea that, hey, the Bible teaches that there was a worldwide flood, that was only thousands of years ago, not even close to 1 million years ago. And so you can have these materials last thousands of years, but not 1 million. So these look like flood fossils to me.
Of course, no scientist on the other side of the argument would allow for that.
No, you can't have a flood because a flood, you know, it means that the Bible's right. And if the Bible's right about God judging the world because of sin once, then the Bible's right about its promises that God is going to judge the world because of sin again. And that means that gets personal, doesn't it? It means I have to, you know, deal with my sins and get right with God. And so there's a spiritual component to wanting to reject the flood and the whole Bible.
How have archaeologists, paleontologists, how have they explained the persistence of soft tissues in other fossil specimens? Have they attempted any kind of reasonable explanation?
So far, the attempts are still in what we call the hand-waving stage. So basically, it's not very reasonable yet. And I don't know if they will find anything. I'm anxious for them to find some way to get preservation to happen. But you'd really have to suspend the laws of physics that describe how chemicals naturally fall apart. Laws of thermodynamics, for example, they have no explanation to circumvent the laws of thermodynamics. They have some possible ways to keep certain proteins from getting exposed to bacteria, but that's really not the main problem. Let's grant that bacteria were not around somehow, and they have not been eating away at these bones and other tissues beneath the Earth's surface for a long time. Even granting that, though, we still have proteins falling apart in accordance with the second law of thermodynamics. So there's no good explanation for that yet. But they all have faith that someone will come up with some explanation eventually of how these tissues can persist for as long as they need them to.
But if their model were true in terms of its time scale and how fossils were formed originally and how they come to us today, what they should have found here would be just kind of a garden variety set of bones, disarticulated, replaced by mineral deposits and stone, and not an intact creature.
I think that's pretty accurate. I mean, you might find a pile of dust in place, but that's not what we see. We don't see the total degradation that should exist after even 1 million years. Instead, we see these amazing skin scales still on these things. It's incredible.
Someone's going to say, okay, I believe what the Bible has to say in terms of the time frame, the flood, and all of that, but what does the Bible have to say, if anything, about creatures like this, about dinosaurs?
Well, it doesn't name dinosaurs specifically. Of course, that word wasn't invented until the mid-1800s, but it does talk about dragons, and it does talk about a creature named Behemoth in Job chapter 40. And it describes physically a creature that I think most closely resembles a dinosaur, and that was still a living after the flood. So we think dinosaurs, God created them. It says he created every creature that lives on the land, and then every creature lives on the land and has nostrils, breathes air, was flooded if it wasn't on board the ark. So we think some of these dinosaurs were on the ark along with every other creature that has nostrils, and then along with the other creatures, they got off the ark, representatives of them anyways, and began to proliferate across the earth. Not too many hundreds of years after that, one of them encountered Job, apparently, in the description of a behemoth, which I think is a sauropod dinosaur. But then they went extinct one by one as the Ice Age progressed after the flood and as people began to catch up with God's mandate to be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth.
Some people hearing you say, well, they were dinosaurs on Noah's Ark, are going to picture, even people who believe the flood account, they're going to picture a Tyrannosaurus Rex, you know, a 25-foot creature, or a brontosaurus that, you know, soars up to maybe 45 feet tall when he's extending his neck with his little head peeking out of the top of the ark. Is that what you're talking about?
No, all those started small because they came from eggs no larger than a football. So all the dinosaurs had, you know, were smaller when they were younger. And so the giant ones about which you're speaking, they're older. You know, they're in their 30s to 50s, maybe 40s anyways. And they grew fast, they grew big, but they started small. So they could have easily fit about 65 pairs would have fit in one corner of one deck on the three-deck arc of Noah. we've done a feasibility study on it here at the Institute, and it all does fit if you actually crunch the numbers.
Someone is going to ask then, what became of creatures like this? This one that, if you look at these stunning pictures from National Geographic, you're looking at, you know, a car-sized creature with, as you said, huge armor plating, scales and spikes all over his body, or those other creatures that we see in movies like Jurassic Park. What became of these enormous creatures?
Well, hang on. Jurassic Park, those were pretty fictional. So let's not say that those represented actual fossils. But yeah, the ones we know from what's in the ground, what became of them? The ones that we see as fossils, those were buried in the flood. And so we have representatives of those that God brought on board the ark, descriptions of them in many ancient cultures, including dragon legends. But those dragon legends also include descriptions of dragon slayers. So we have people hunting these things. I mean, can you imagine a tank-sized animal with all these spikes running around in your backyard? That you'd feel threatened. And that's what people do historically when they move into a new habitable zone, is they get rid of the biggest threats. The largest animals die first from an area. That's why there's no bears in Dallas, where I live, anymore. But there's Bear Creek Road, where there used to be bears. We got rid of the bears because they're too threatening. So that, I think, contributed to dinosaur demise after the flood, but also climate change, dramatic climate change due to the ending of the Ice Age.
Brian Thomas has a bachelor's degree in biology and a master's degree in biotechnology. He's a science writer for the Institute for Creation Research, and you'll find a link to the Institute for Creation Research at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Brian, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you, Todd. I appreciate it.
On the other side of the break, Holly Shearer joins us. Mother's Day approaches. Just some simple ideas for what to give mother on that day and why Mother's Day still matters. We'll be right back.
Children are a heritage from the Lord, but what of those who've not been given the gift of a child? The cross of barrenness affects not only childless couples, it affects the family, friends, and pastors who love and care for them. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm partnering with Emmanuel Press to publish the second edition of my book, He Remembers the Barren, a story about the hope and contentment found only in Christ, no matter the cross we bear. Visit emmanuelpress.us to learn more. emmanuelpress.us.
Your pastor has been called to shepherd you as a member of Christ's flock. Doxology offers an innovative program of advanced study retreats where your pastor can be refreshed, renewed, and refocused. Find out more at doxology.us. Many pastors report that doxology has been one of the most valuable learning experiences since seminary. Doxology, the Lutheran Center for Spiritual Care and Counsel. Doxology.us. Doxology.us.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Would you like to help a college or seminary student attend the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference? You can purchase a conference scholarship for a contribution of $120 to Issues Etc. You can donate online at issuesetc.org/scholarship, or you can make your $120 check payable to Issues Etc., write scholarship in the memo line, and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234.
At Concordia Evangelical Lutheran Church of Wilmington, Delaware, our mission is to serve our community by sharing Christian hope. We've been doing this since 1938 and joyfully continue to do so in the 21st century. If you're ever in the city that DuPont Chemical Corporation calls home, or is known by some as the credit card capital of the world, we hope you visit to receive Jesus through His word and sacrament. Otherwise, check us out on the web at ConcordiaWilmington.com.